change.
Yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening, and we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great collection of people who truly believe and act on the fact that we are the nation. I'm hoping, ladies and gentlemen, that our nationhood will survive. There are days when I have doubts, when I see the way that our public education system has fallen internationally and the rankings of our children as compared to other developed nations in the world. But I also have hopes because I believe in the resilience of the human spirit. And I believe that as Americans, we have always striven to do what is right instead of what is easy. And when we have discovered in ourselves faults or behaviors that were unkind or cruel or lacking in compassion for others, we have strained every muscle to change them. Because we are a compassionate people, because we are a caring people, we often go way beyond what is necessary in the hopes that we can make a perfect world. Unfortunately, only God can do that, and we are not God. However, there are people in our nations, government, who believe that they are God, that they are somehow able to remake the world in their own image, to somehow or other level the playing field of life so that all people are identical and all people are the same and all people need to live the exact same lives and do the exact same things. Our public education system has been trying to do this for over 35 years. Our topic tonight is related to this utopian dream. It asks, what is a college education for? As a college graduate myself, with a Bachelor of Arts in Spanish and a Master's in Transpersonal Psychology, I will not trade my education for anything. I am absolutely thrilled that I was able to go to college. I learned so much about myself and about many different areas of academics. It was a wonderful opportunity. And that's the key word, ladies and gentlemen. It was an opportunity for me. My family was not wealthy. My father was an aeronautical engineer who had a good living and who believed that it was his duty and responsibility as a father to provide as much education for his children as they could achieve and benefit from. He put himself into debt to send me to college and adamantly refused any offer I made to repay him for it, because in his mind, that was both his job and his joy. Our president made a speech a few months ago implying I go to college, as if going to college was a necessary component of being a viable human being. And again, I remind you, I am a college graduate, and I am very grateful for it. But I do not believe that it has made me a better human being. It has merely made me a better educated one in certain areas of academic thought. When I have problems with my automobile, my degree in Spanish is as useful as breasts on a billiard ball. I want someone who has been trained and understands how to work with mechanical objects. I want someone who is knowledgeable and competent at the skill I need to continue to do my job, take care of my family, and get to where I need to go. I am not at all interested in whether or not the gentleman who works on my car or the lady who works on my car has a degree in automotive engineering. If they do, I'm happy for them. If that degree in automotive engineering made it possible for them to do a better job on my car than the guy who'd learned hands-on from the time he was 16, fine and dandy. But I really don't think it does. Colleges and universities produce people in certain areas who are prepared to enter professions. Medical degrees, law degrees, all prepare graduate students for entering the professions of engineering, medicine, and law. These are important professions, except possibly law. No, that was nasty. Let's first kill all the lawyers. But engineers and doctors are essential to keep this world of ours healthy and productive. They are truly vocationally apt degrees. But women's studies, French literature, Native American traditions, elementary basket weaving? No, they're not. As mind-expanding experiences in fields of knowledge that might pertain to the luxuries of life, art, music, entertainment, etc., they have their value. But if you can't sing, all the degrees in music in the world are not going to make you receive a record contract. You can act, all the drama degrees in the world are not going to get you a bit part in the latest movie or a commercial on television. All the design in jewelry and gold and so on, if you can't use an acetylene torch, you're not going to be able to let fix anything that you yourself have made. One of the things my husband noticed when he was teaching apprentices in goldsmithing and jewelry work was that the ones who came to him from college courses in jewelry design had about as much ability to size a ring as my cats do. They had to go to school under him and learn basic metallurgy. And he used to keep a pot of honey on his desk as an immediate antibiotic treatment for burns. And I'll bet you that many of those design students probably went through about a gallon each until they figured out that one end of the torch burns you if you touch it. College is a wonderful thing. My degrees are in the liberal arts area. The only one that actually has benefited me in my work is my bachelor's in Spanish. Today, for example, I had to substitute for our Spanish teacher, who has resigned, and we have not replaced her. I'm one of the two paraprofessionals at my school who speak fluent Spanish. And fortunately, I did not have any students in my classroom, so I was available to fill in. I spent an hour and a half teaching a room full of students how to listen to a date stated in Spanish and write it in English, or at least how to try. So my degree in Spanish was vocationally useful today. It was vocationally useful several times when I worked in human resources. I was talking with casual labor, who came from Latin American countries, explaining what was required of them, and answering their questions about anything they had to ask. So, in a sense, my liberal arts degree did have a vocational aspect. I didn't enter that degree specifically for vocational reasons. I entered that particular program because I dearly love languages. I am a good communicator, and I wish to be able to communicate with people in languages other than English. Had I been able to spare the time and the money, I probably would have been a perpetual college student with several doctorates in Romance languages, etc. And I probably would have branched out into the Cyrillic languages, Greek, Russian, and I would have taken a stab at Chinese, purely and simply because those subjects passionately interest me. My college degree was for me. My growth, my development, my interest, my desire to learn. I was very fortunate in that many of the courses I took as a part of my college education have come in very handy in my work in education because I have a good working knowledge of a lot of the material that is taught in the four core subjects, English, math, science, and history, from 7th grade through high school, which means that I am an asset in the school system where I work because I can, at need, pinch hit for a missing teacher and do a reasonable job of educating the students in those subjects. It was not what I had planned to do. As a matter of fact, initially I had intended to be an English teacher, but that got kind of sidetracked, and I've done a great many other things. Most of them have been directly and indirectly involved in educating people. So my college degree, my bachelor's degree, did have vocational applications. Not all college degrees do, nor should they have to. There is a belief in this country, and it's somewhat, I guess, we want culturally for our children to be better educated than we are, if that is possible. We see education as a passport to greater material success, because we are continually bombarded with the differential in salary between those with degrees and those who do not have them. But the downside of that is that we overlook the fact that it isn't the college degree necessarily that causes that differential. It's the intelligence, drive, and energy of the person who has gotten that degree to step in and learn and rise within the structure of a business or profession. College and a degree do not necessarily guarantee that the person who has it is going to be competent or skilled at anything. About the only thing you can say for a four-year degree is that the person at least had enough steadfastness to stick to it for 4 years. And that in and of itself is a plus on a resume because of the implication that they were able to meet objective standards set by someone other than themselves and persist until they had achieved a goal. Qualities that we need in people who work with and for us. But the purpose of a college degree has become quasi-vocational. The idea that if you don't have one, you're doomed to be a poor slob for the rest of your life. This is as false as most of the progressive dreams, because I know many people who never set foot on the campus of a college or university and become billionaires. Steve Jobs is a good example, although he did set foot, but he quit. Glenn Beck is another one. Native intelligence, the desire to succeed, willingness to learn, the ability to rise above your own failures and go back and give it another shot. These are not things that come with a piece of paper that says you graduated with a BA or a BS or an MA or any of the other strings of letters that people like to put behind their names. We need to stop telling our kids that a college degree is the end-all, be-all of success. We need to stop forcing children who have no academic interests or still into an academic path that will cause them to fail. We need to stop the idiotic assumption that if we send everybody to college, everybody will be smart. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, that is the ridiculous assumption that our president is espousing when he talks about let's send everybody to college. Let's make college affordable for everyone. Well, whether it's affordable or not, it isn't necessarily right for everyone. We do not have, outside of certain unions and certain cooperative college programs, a real vocational track for our kids from eighth grade on up. We do not any longer have real business education. What we have is a mess. We have an education system that does everything but educate children. It tells them that unless they become MA, MBA, BS, whatever, 50,000 strings behind their names, they are not valuable people. So if that arena of thought and skill is not their expertise, we set them out telling them they are going to be a second-class citizen. So good mechanics, good heating and air conditioning technicians, good crane operators, good truck drivers are being steered toward fields in which they have no ability and no interest, and wind up serving hamburgers at McDonald's because they flunk out of college or they have a degree in elementary basket weaving that can't prove they know anything. Or they get into pro sports, hurt their ankle, foot, leg, or head, and get dropped in their first season. It used to be, long ago, when I was a youngster, that we believed, as a nation, in the virtue of work. any work, honest work, was a good thing. To earn one's living with the skills of one's hands or one's head was a positive goal. Whether you were the very best garbage man in town or the town doctor, the most important lawyer or the best refrigerator repairman in three counties, you were doing honest work and giving good value for the salary you were paid. You were a decent, upright, upstanding, valuable citizen. We need to, sorry, folks, reactionary, you know, hide back, turn the clock back, conservative speaking, we need to back up and take a look at what we are telling our kids about the importance of doing work. We need to get away from the easy button and the automatic salary increase if you can take enough cheat courses to get a degree in something so you'll make lots of money. We need to get away from the idea that if it isn't easy, I don't have to do it, and you'll give me an A anyway because I smiled at you and brought you an apple yesterday. We need to get away from the idea that a very fine chef is somehow less important than an overeducated idiot who just lost a debate last night. I'd rather eat what my husband cooks than listen to our current president anytime. If you want an example of what making the path easy to a Harvard education looks like, see the reruns of last night's debate. Listen to the same tired, progressive, share the wealth, redistribution of wealth, make everybody live in a city so we can control them, outright falsehoods, lies, and misrepresentations that came out of the mouth of the man who was elected president of this country. If that doesn't turn you off of let's make everybody go to college, I don't know what will. Yes, his opponent also went to college, but his opponent actually learned something there that he applied to business, and he was successful at it. He signed the front and the back of paychecks. He applied what he learned and learned from his experiences what he was taught's value and was able to use it to benefit millions of people. You don't think the Salt Lake City Olympics didn't bring millions of jobs to Utah? The contrast between the educated idiot and the man has never been more than yesterday. To a college to Muslim. Mission and how to create a failed policy, a consistently failed policy in the greatest country in the world. Is this what you want for your kids? And believe me, I am not in any way averse to sending anybody to college if they have the academic ability and the desire to learn. They should go in a heartbeat and learn what college has to teach them, not only in the classroom, but in the responsibility it takes to do well in majors and fields where you actually have to know things in order to pass a course. But if you've got a kid who is a wizard with his hands He can fix anything that breaks in your house from the age of 6, and books bore him to tears, then for God's sake, don't send him to college to become a failure. Get him apprenticed to somebody who rebuilds empty cars, or get him a job at 16 in a local garage so he can put his skills to work. Tell him how proud you are of him because he is doing honest work. He is worth his salt. A good expression, ladies and gentlemen. To be worth one's salt goes all the way back to the Roman legions who were paid. Part of their pay was salt allowance. Salt, in ancient times, was a commodity. It was a very, very valuable commodity. And the legionnaire's salt ration was further proof that he was a good soldier, he was a reliable man, he could be trusted to follow orders to the letter, he was smart enough when the orders weren't there to use his head and save a situation. He was worth his salt. And Roman legionaries were not educated at collegia, ladies and gentlemen. The ordinary legionary probably came from the back slums of Rome. But the legions gave him the opportunity to prove himself, to do honest work that built an empire that lasted for several hundred years. College is a wonderful opportunity. It is a great chance to expand your worldview, to learn from people who know a great deal more than you do about specific subjects, to explore many different areas of learning, and with luck, find one that rouses your passion, energizes you, and gives you something to motivate you to go out there and make the world better in some way. Not all by yourself, necessarily, and not as the very best in the world at anything, but as somebody who not only loves to learn themselves, but because of that delight in learning, inculcate that in others. A university or college education was intended to educate potential leaders in many, many fields. Academic, political, engineering, medicine, philosophy. Leaders, people who would take what they learned and go farther. And in the process, take the rest of us a little bit farther as well. That's what a college education is for. It is not a piece of paper that says to a potential employer, you have to pay me X amount of dollars because I managed to stick it out for 4 years. But that's what our kids are being told. I'll bet you that if you took any 15 kids between the ages of 12 and 17 and asked them, why should you go to college? 11 of them would say, so I can get a good job and make a lot of money. Because this is what they're being told. That somehow or other, you have to have that magic sheepskin in order to be materially successful in this world. Now, I would like for you to let your imagination roam a little. And imagine that you are on the side of the road with a broken down car, and you are needing a tow truck, and you are needing that tow truck to take you to a garage so you can get that broken down car fixed and make it to your job tomorrow. And the driver of the tow truck is Barack Obama. The car mechanic is Joe Biden. And the people who are going to help you, the car mechanic, are Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. Are you going to get to work tomorrow? My friend Linda just said, dear God. Yeah, I agree. Guess what? I'm not going to get work tomorrow. Education, ladies and gentlemen, is not just about pieces of paper that say you have sat in a classroom for a specific length of time, managed to do enough work to be moved to the next level, and got out with your skin intact. Education is about knowledge acquired and kept, not only academic knowledge and practical knowledge, but self-knowledge. Education is about how to learn and how to continue learning when you are no longer under the thumb of an adult telling you you have to. Every member of our Patriot family, ladies and gentlemen, is a lifelong learner. They won't sit there and swallow garbage because the person giving it to them has a title or prestigious position in government or anywhere else. They want to know. So they ask questions and they do research and they talk with their neighbors and their friends. They want to find out, so they go and look. They are educated in the very best sense of the world, no matter what their level of formal education, because they continue to educate themselves. As my friend Linda says, quoting Jefferson, question with boldness and speak without fear. That is the result of real education, not a paycheck with many zeros before the decimal point, not a high position in government and the inability to articulate one's own ideology in front of millions, not the partisan methods of refusing to even listen to an idea from the opposition party, let alone consider adopting any part of it. These are not educated people. These are people with degrees. There is a vast difference between the two. Our emperor has been discovered to be wearing no clothes. All of those lovely Harvard Law Review and encomiums from everybody and anybody about how intelligent and perspicacious and so on and so forth kind of fall flat when the gentleman in question doesn't have a teleprompter or a prepared speech to deliver. Forensics, as a study, is the art of delivering political speeches. It was taught. Rhetoric. It was an extension of rhetoric in ancient Greece and Rome, and was taught to all members of the patrician classes. Because in those days, in order to have part in government, you had to be a patrician. The ordinary man, in general, in the early Roman Republic, was not a member of the Roman Senate. It was the upper classes. The ordinary man, the polites, in Greece, generally did not have power. Usually the power went to those of patrician or noble blood, lineage, wealth, whose sons were educated to be able to know how to use that power. And part of the way they used it was in speaking and articulating their ideas clearly and persuasively enough so that the polites and the plebeians would follow them. The difference between those patricians and their courses in rhetoric and forensics was that they didn't have teleprompters and they didn't have a cadre of speechwriters. They had to get up there extempore and convince a crowd not to kill them. And most of them were able to do it. Statesmanship does come from a piece of paper from a university. Statesmanship comes from being an educated person in the best sense of the world. Understanding economics, understanding the culture in which you attempt to lead, understanding the frailties of all human beings, including yourself, and above all, understanding that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That is statesmanship. We have many, many, many politicians in this nation. We have very few statesmen. We will not get statesmen if we continue to misconstrue what education truly is to our children. We will not get statesmen or statesmanship if we tell our kids that the only reason that they aren't wealthy is because nobody paid for them to go to college. Or the only reason they can't have everything they want is because people don't like them because they are, fill in the blank, handicapped, this color, go to this church, family came from here, poor, deprived, learning disabled, you name it. Any excuse will do. So long as I have an excuse, then I can you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? Can you hear me? I'm asking the folks on in the chat, for those of you who are listening out there in Blog Talk, I'm asking if they can hear me so I can get some feedback here. Looks like my computer was attempting to double call in here, and I don't quite know why. I don't know. I haven't said anything really inflammatory yet, so maybe it isn't Homeland Security. But anyhow, to get back to my topic tonight, we have seen, ladies and gentlemen, over the last 30 or 40 years, the fallacy in attempting to promise equal outcomes. We can't get equal outcomes. It's not possible to get equal outcomes because you do not have equal abilities across the board among all human beings. Outcomes are based on individual effort, skill, talent, and energy. They are not guaranteed by anything or anyone. There is absolutely no guarantee that every single human being in the United States of America will be skill, ability, talent, or energy. And yet, we have a president who, as my friend Linda is saying, the Occupy Wall Street people, the union thugs, Lenin, Stalin, and Alinsky write all his speeches for him. The myth of equal outcomes and the myth of the level playing field is doing more to destroy this country than Hitler could do, or Hirohito, or the British Empire, for heaven's sake. If we do not start reforming our understanding of what education is and should be, we cannot reform our failing public system. We have got to stop looking at everybody go to college, they'll all be poor, as the goal of American education. We have got to start looking at education is an opportunity for everyone, and as such should be available to everyone. What you do with it is up to you. I'm sorry if your feelings are hurt when you get an F because you can't add 2 plus 2 and come up with 4 twice in a row. It doesn't make 2 plus 2 equal to 5, and it doesn't make you smart in math. You may be very You may sing like a bird in the dawning. You may draw like Rembrandt. You may compose music like Beethoven. You may play basketball like, whatever the latest hotshot NBA player is. Or football like the legendary quarterbacks. Or golf like Tiger Woods or anybody else. But you're not any good at math. So don't plan on taking college algebra. I have this in my ISS classroom, who has been promoted to 8th grade, who whips out his calculator to do 4 minus 3 because he can't do it in his head. And needless to say, he is baffled by using the distributive property. He has 9 parentheses x plus 2 closed parentheses, and he can't make it come out to 9 plus 18, even with a calculator. And this child will be promoted to 9th grade, I will guarantee you. And will go to high school. And what he'll do, I have no idea. And I kind of understand why, because I would feel a great sigh of relief because I no longer have to try to pound any knowledge into a rock. And I know that his teachers in every area feel the same way. I have another one who happened to be in one of the classes I subbed for this week. Said, I really like out of school suspension better. I can go hunting better than in school suspension. And he spends a great deal of time both. My friend Lynn is a very smart woman. She just said, I think it should be up to the parents and the child to see what the child's got and then go for it and pursue it. And that's exactly it, Linda. It needs to come back to the family and the community, and not be administered top-down from idiots in the Department of Education who want teachers to individually tutor everybody in a classroom of 25 at their own pace and achieve objective standards at the end of the year so they all are A-students in everything, which is exactly what the federal guidelines and requirements upon which funding for schools hinge. That's what No Child Left Behind is about. Raise the standards. Okay. What good is that going to do to the kid who can't even achieve the minimal ones? Promote him down the line. Send him out into the workforce. There's garbage trucks out there that need somebody on the back of them. But unfortunately, I don't think that some of these kids I've dealt with would be able to figure out which end of the garbage can goes into the truck. I really don't think they could. Now, there may be something that they're really good at. I don't know. I haven't yet seen it. I don't know. You know, maybe the boy who likes OSS because he can go hunting. Maybe he can work for the Forest Service or, you know, join an Indian tribe or something. Or spend his time walking around with a bow and arrow as an extra in movies since they remake the Hunger Games. Yeah. Stand around, you know, holding a bow so everybody can see that this is a bow, or demonstrating how to load a hunting rifle. I'm sure he can do that. He doesn't need to go to college. He wouldn't be able to figure out which dorm he lived in. And I'm sorry that that's the case, but I cannot fix stupid, and neither can anybody else. And unfortunately, there are stupid people. They are not intellectually capable of learning what we would consider a competent eighth grade education. And yet, our educational system is basically attempting to tell them that if we just put them in classes with kids who can learn, somehow or other it will come up by osmosis. And they'll get smarter. No, they won't. I watched collaborative classes for 30 years. They have done the exact opposite of what the progressive utopians thought they would do. The purpose of collaborative classes, which for those of you who aren't familiar with this particular type of education, is 60-40 percentage proportion of special education and general education students in a classroom with one general education teacher and one or more special education teachers. 60% average or above, 40% special ed. This supposedly was going to raise up the special ed students in self-esteem and give them more quality time with their peers and more sense of self-worth and induce in their brighter peers compassion and love for these children who couldn't quite manage to compete on an equal basis with them, but for whom they would obviously feel sorry and want to protect and make feel good. It didn't work that way, folks. I'd say at least 70% of the kids that I get in my ISS room are from the 40% in collaborative classes. My friend Rod said that he was teaching his youngsters algebra trig at a very young age. And the teacher, okay, they were 11 and 10. The teacher sent home a note telling him to stop because it was making her class boring for them. If we're going to have a shot, ladies and gentlemen, at giving our kids something close to the learn at your own pace and still meet objective standards, we can't do it with the traditional classroom model, a mantra that everybody needs to go to college. The only way we can attempt to come close to the stream is if we totally revamp the way we educate through the use of technology, really good teachers. Not more of them, but good teachers. Instead of 60 SPED teachers and 100 general education teachers for a 900 student school, how about 20 general education teachers, 2 SPED teachers, and a computer that individual student can work with software, have teacher assistance available when needed, either via Skype, on the computer, or with the teacher in the room. Their progress can be monitored. Their pace can be what they themselves can handle, so that nobody gets bored and nobody has to be held back because the stupid can't understand. And God love the stupid. They don't have to be made to feel even worse because everybody else is way ahead of them. The only way we're going to be able to do this is to get the federal government out of our schools. Totally out of our schools. No more Department of Education. No more top-down national curricula or No Child Left Behind or learning disabilities qualify as a disability under the Act. Need accommodations so that a kid can throw a chair, but that's just the way he expresses his anger. Just get out of the way and let him get on with it. If local and state authorities control education, education is closer to the people who are using it for themselves and their children. The farther away you get from local control, the less freedom and the less of a republic we become. turning everything in your life over to Washington to handle for you is insanity. Anybody with one quarter of a grain of common sense has seen what Washington does when you let them handle something. The overreach of the federal government against their constitutionally enumerated powers has proven over and over and over again the wisdom of the founders. They can't and shouldn't do everything. Our president likes to stigmatize the Constitution as a charter of negative liberties for government. Personally, I think that's a damn fine compliment to the founders, because it's supposed to be a charter of negative liberties to government. It's a charter of positive liberties to the people. You cannot be a self-governing nation if you are not self-governing individuals and communities. You cannot stand for freedom and say you will defend it if you do everything in your power to curtail and eliminate it by imposing top-down rules and regulations and ideology that have absolutely no relationship to reality. And every time they have been tried, they have failed miserably and usually with buckets of blood to mark the failure. Let's educate our kids, first of all, to be learners. And secondly, let's educate them to do something that's of value to themselves or others. Let's stop with the level playing field. It's not a freaking football game. It is skills and abilities and knowledge for life. Life is not a football game. There isn't a referee standing by to stop the illegal tackle that could hurt somebody. There isn't an umpire to judge whether or not the ball was a strike or a ball. There isn't a line coach to determine whether or not the serve was in or out. There is you, what you know, what you believe, and what you're willing to try. And you can't be willing to try if you're told from the outset in a public school system that unless you do this particular track, you are inevitably doomed to be second class and a failure. But that's okay because everybody will love you anyway and the government will take care of you. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the philosophy of public education. College degree, so you can make a lot of money, but if you don't get one, it's not your fault. We're sorry. You're really sweet and lovable, and we'll do it because we'll provide you with housing and food and insurance and an Obama phone and give you everything that'll make your life happy because we know that you are just irremediably stupid, but we love you anyway. A nation built on those kinds of ideas, okay, doesn't even start out. It's doomed from the beginning. We weren't built on ideas like that, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't achieve what we have achieved as a nation and as a people on ideas like that. We didn't assume that a piece of paper from a university guaranteed that you're better than everybody else and entitled to worship. We didn't demean people who worked with their hands and tell them that they weren't able to succeed without government help, which is what we're doing now. We didn't promise that everybody was going to have equal stuff in everybody's house. If you wanted stuff, you had to go out there and work, earn money to buy the stuff. You weren't entitled to the stuff. What you were entitled to were the freedoms and liberties mentioned in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. two of the greatest documents in human history. And not all the founders, ladies and gentlemen, had university education. Not all the founders came from the moneyed classes. Ben Franklin didn't. Roger Sherman didn't. But they were educated men. Self-educated men. Men who desired to know. My friend Linda said, if all of those progressive ideas were in the country at the beginning, we'd still be cooking over an open fire for our turkey at Thanksgiving. And she's exactly right. When you tell somebody that he or she does not have to take risks and does not have to deal with failure, that they will be taken care of from cradle to grave, then you tell them that they don't have to ever do anything new. As a matter of fact, you tell them they shouldn't. Because if they go out and do something new, guess what? That wasn't what the government told you you should do. So you'll have to be removed from society because you are corrupting the purity of the perfect Marxist state. Why do you think media outlets like CNN and MSNBC and NPR and a lot of the other left proponents vilify conservatives so much? It's because conservatives think. And we can't have that in a progressive society. There was a gentleman on the Blaze TV this evening, on Real News, Glenn Beck's show. He had a guest host, and he had a panel of people who were experts, although the left doesn't think they are. They think they're, you know, how dare they say they're experts on Islam and Islamic Jihad and terrorism and so on, just because they have been studying it or involved with it or reviewing it or reporting on it for 35 or 40 years. They're not experts because they didn't graduate from the university of Islamic thought. Anyway, one of these people who is an expert, who happened to be a practicing Muslim from Egypt, made a very, very good explanation of why Islamic Jihadist terrorists apparently feel no compunction and cheer and are thrilled and laugh and carry through the streets a sodomized U.S. ambassador or a beheaded journalist. What he said was the version of Islam that is most common and most often taught in the Middle East is an Islam that forbids you to think or question. You are to accept whatever the Imam says as the ultimate truth. There is no truth outside the Quran and Sharia law. To even question whether there might be is blasphemy. You must do only that which is sanctioned by Islamic law and Islamic thought. You must eliminate your humanity and be a totally obedient, unthinking follower of Allah as taught by the Imams of the Middle East. And when you lose your humanity, you lose the ability to see a fellow human being as human if he or she is not a totally obedient follower of Allah as taught by the Imams of the Middle East. So when you sodomize an ambassador or behead a journalist, you can laugh and caper and sing in the streets because that wasn't really a human being that you treated that way. That was an enemy of Islam. My friend Linda says it sounds so primitive. And she's right. It is primitive. It is taking Islam back to its primitive tribal roots in a time when savagery was the norm. And it is a potent drug. ultimate obedience, passive willingness to do everything one is told, can be as seductive as any pharmaceutical or natural mind-expanding substance. That is the root of sadomasochism. In effect, the form of Islam that is practiced and taught in most of the Middle East is a sadomasochistic religion, with the imams as the dominatrix and the people who follow them as the willing masochists. And yes, my friend Rod, sounds like a bunch of slaves could buy a dictator. And it is. In that version of Islam, Allah is not a benevolent dictator, not a loving monarch, just a flat-out dictator. And his voice is the imams. And you must be totally obedient and totally unthinking outside the bounds of Islam and Sharia. This place is so very close to classic communism and Marxism that it ought to give you new insight into some of the influences in our current president's early life. To be totally submissive to be dehumanized to the point where you believe only what your leader tells you. Was the method of brainwashing that was used on many of the prisoners of war during the Korean conflict. And it was tried again on many of our POWs in Vietnam. Not quite as scientifically. They did it more brutally, but that was the basic idea. Progressives, like those in power in the Democratic Party today, would be horrified at the idea that this was what they wanted to do. I would be called an evil, horrible conspiracy theorist and crazy if I said that their ideology is identical, only their methods differ. My friend Linda says, and all of this is done by force, and she's right. But it isn't always physical force. Economic force, peer pressure force, societal acceptance force. Look at the fact that they have sanitized entertainment to the point that you don't show anybody smoking because it's bad. Make it socially unacceptable. Yes, it is bad. But social pressure does quite a lot more than brute force. Because brute force applied to people who are used to being free have backlash. They generally don't respond to it very well. We don't beat our children into unconsciousness for minor infractions as a rule in this nation. So they're not trained to accept physical force as a means of coercion and control. But they are taught social pressures. And they are influenced by peer pressure. And they are influenced by authoritarian pressure from smooth-talking politicians who promise them all of the goodies if they just give up just a tiny little bit of their freedom and self-determination. And this incremental creation of the sadomasochistic Islamic follower. Okay. You can see the parallels if you really look. The methods differ, but the end is the same. The 2007 speech by the president to Hampton University, calling for, let's not build any more highways in suburbs. Let's concentrate on public transportation. Let's force those who live in suburban areas outside of major cities. Let's force them back into the cities. Because in the city, they can be more easily controlled. You can't grow your own food very easily in a city. You don't generally fix something that gets broken because you don't own it in the city. You don't own your house. You don't own your life in a city. Somebody else's responsibility to do all the things that need doing. And when somebody else has the responsibility, you don't have the freedom. Because freedom and responsibility go together. So if we send all of our kids to college, okay, and give them that piece of paper, it's guaranteed you're going to have a good job and earn a lot of money, and we'll give it to you in the government. Pretty soon we're going to have all government and absolutely nothing else. We will have the capital, as in the Hunger Games. We'll have a place that parcels us out into work camps. Those of us who aren't good citizens within the government machine will have to be sequestered somewhere. And if we send all of our kids to college, can teach them how to be good cops in the machine and good members of government and good, smarter than everybody else so I can tell you what to do, leaders. That's the progressive interpretation of advanced education as a means to teach and help create leadership. Every single one of the progressives' policies leads to the goal of making sure that your life is totally controlled by government and not by you. And the quickest and easiest way to do this within a generation or two is to start with education of the children. If everybody stormed in with guns and bombs, we'd fight back and we'd say, we'll kill you, stop it, no, you can't do this to us. But when it's couched as, oh, we'll make it better for your kids, they're entitled to a free education. They're entitled to the success that this will bring. We don't want to think of ourselves as bad parents. We want things like that for our kids. We want the best for them. We want them to succeed. And it's the chink in our armor that the progressives have taken great advantage of over the past 35 years. Education isn't directed at us adults. It's directed at our children. The indoctrination into cog in the machine, progressive groupthink, has been going on for over 30 years. It will not change unless we scrap what we've got and start all over. And like the intro to the $6 million man, okay, we've got the technology, we can fix it. We can get back to the meaning of education by using the incredible burst of technology that we have. We can use today's amazing, miraculous technology to rebuild an old idea that was much more correct than the so-called new ones. I like the irony in that, ladies and gentlemen. I like the fact that our incredible advances can be used to bring us back to fundamental truths that don't go away because we've got computers and the internet and iPhones and GPSs and digital recorders. Fundamental truths are fundamental truths. And one of them is that education is opportunity, not guarantee. It is a good, a right. And we all have, or should have, the opportunity to take advantage of it. Have a caller, let me see who's online. Hello?
Good evening, Terry. How are you? Glad to have you back.
Well, thank you, dear. It's nice to be back. Got a brand new set of teeth. Had to have 13 of them pull, and now I have dentures in, and I'm still able to articulate reasonably well.
Wow. Well, you better make sure the husband takes you out for a good steak then, I guess, eh?
When I get to the point where they're more comfortable, hun, then he's on the hook for it. But yes, sir.
I just, you know, I wanted to say that. You know, you're so right about, you know, 99% of everything you say, you know, you are just right on, you know, the money with this whole thing. I mean, you know, and in college, you know, in keeping with your topic of your show and your show description here just for a moment, you know, the college thing where, you know, everybody should go to college and get a great education. It is such a huge, huge misconception. You know, there are many people that are, you know, not, you know, it was all intended. It was all part of the agenda, you know, to put people, actually, to put them in debt. You don't know how many people today, and I didn't get to listen to all your show, you may have mentioned how many people are actually, you know, indebted to the government and, you know, therefore even more of a slave to the government because they are in debt. And
exactly. And you're correct. I hadn't brought that up tonight, but you're perfectly correct. It's just one more way to tie us to the government apron strings. If you owe the government hundreds of thousands of dollars for your college education, you're going to snap up any assistance they will offer you because your chance of paying that back, starting at the bottom, as you still have to do even with that magic diploma, is going to be almost impossible. I've got another caller, so hold on for just a second and see who else is on the line here. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Hi, Michael. Hello, Terry, everyone in the chat room. You touched a little bit on the cramming people into the cities, and if you probably watched that portion of Eric Sackle, I think his name is Sackleback or whatever. Anyway, he's the fill-in for Glenn, talking about Agenda 21 and that the president, of course, is working overtime trying to implement this in every way possible, and they've been doing it for eons. I can go back to 74 with the regionalism in California, and this is an evil thing, and I fight this all the time, but just for kicks and giggles, one of the reasons I say because Obama looked very ill to me and very uncomfortable, but this is the first time in 4.5 years or better that he has not had a teleprompter and that he was actually challenged in a way that he has never been before because they're in the tank for him and he didn't like it, and I'm sure his wife was giving him holy you know what on the way home.
Oh, I'll bet. My God.
Yeah, I think, you know, Michael and I had talked about this before on previous shows with Pastor Lindsay Williams thinking that the elites had decided it was an insider and he used to be their pastor of the huge global elites, that they don't want him back in. So I think it's done. I really do.
Given his performance and given the fact that, like I said earlier in the show, guys, what you saw last night was what happens when you shove somebody through based on something that has nothing to do with talent or skill.
Right.
To, quote-unquote, level the playing field. And you basically get down on your knees and kiss his whatevers as a means of expiating your own somehow or other acquired guilt from 200 years ago. This is what you get. This is a well-educated man in the minds of many people. And they construe well-educated, meaning degrees, 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 with being intelligent. That's not always the case. I have known lots of people who have degrees who are as stupid as a box of rocks. They were good academically. My dad went to high school with a girl who had a photographic memory, an eidetic memory. She could remember everything she'd ever read, what book, what page number, what line. But when it came to common sense, she would not have been able to open a box that said, open here.
Exactly. Yeah. And this, you know, pouring the stuff out of the boot with the instructions written on the heel.
And, you know, and to bring in, too, with the topic and with I don't know whether you saw the latter part where the gentleman who was filling in for Glenn had his panel of Islamic experts.
Yes.
And they were talking about Islam and the version of it taught in the Middle East. And the gentleman from Egypt talking about losing one's humanity in the ultimate obedience to Allah that particular form of Islam takes.
He also mentioned that's why it's so hard for people like us in our culture to wrap our minds around us.
It is.
Because they are so primitive. They are stuck in the Stone Age.
They are barbaric.
Through the Muhammad dictate.
That same impulse to create that kind of ultimate obedience is underneath the progressive liberal ideology.
That's exactly what
they want.
Right back,
also. Like Michael said, one way they do it, which I hadn't mentioned, but he's right, send your kid to college, make him graduate with $300,000 worth of debt, and he's mine forever, because he can never pay it back.
Well, yeah, because there's no jobs, because of their stupid policies.
And if he's been busily majoring in African-American and Native Indian basket weaving, his shot is, you know, let's face it, it's even less than zero.
Yeah, they'll be in the basement. They'll be the bloggers.
Yeah.
They'll be on Occupy Streets. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They'll be sitting there with their laptop or their Obama phone, you know, while they're defecating on a police car, telling everybody how wonderful they are.
And when they're not doing that, they'll troll Blog Talk and bug us.
Yeah, exactly. Very likely. But then again, we're kind of used to that. It happens all the time.
That's true.
Not as often on, not very often on this show, which
Thank
I'm grateful
Lord.
I am a very firm advocate of freedom of speech, which is one of the reasons I despise Hillary Clinton praising people who want to make it blasphemous for anybody in the world to say anything against Muhammad. But another show.
Yeah.
I am very much in favor of your freedom, everybody's freedom to say anything they damn well please, so long as they believe it to be true. But I am not in favor of stupidity. And most troll types are all about stupidity. I had a friend who posted on Facebook the other day that people were gossiping about her new relationship with a gentleman. And my response to her was that small minds thrive on great rumors. And they do. You know. If you have got anything in your head, you'll fasten onto any outrageous thought you can just to look as if there is something in between your ears. I've watched it with the kids.
My dad taught high school for 28 years he taught high school, and he would come home and he'd grab a cigarette and a glass of vodka or whatever because he had one of those days. And he points to the upper, just below the nose and the upper lip, and he says these kids live from here down. There's nothing going on upstairs.
Absolutely not a thing. I had the sub today for an English teacher who was out, and for the Spanish teacher who has resigned. And it wasn't bad, except that, you know, I was going from 7:40 in the morning until 2:35 with like a 25-minute break there in the middle somewhere.
Right.
But the first period class that I subbed for was a collection of rude, most disrespectful, most totally lacking self-control individuals I have had this fortune to deal with in many years. They're supposed to be eighth grade. They would even stop talking when told full time in the library.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And
that's,
I mean,
great.
Just basic understanding of, no, you don't do that here. To the point.
Yeah, it's, I think it's called decorum.
Yeah. I had to literally scream to get over the sound of them when they had been told they were supposed to be silent reading.
Mm.
It was pathetic. It was utterly pathetic. And the bad part of it was, it wasn't the whole class. It was a core of about four or five of the Box of Rocks variety who can only get attention by acting like class jerk. That's their power base.
Yeah, my uncle used to call them spoon bangers, like the kids in the high chair banging on the thing to get attention.
And that's exactly what they are. And they got the whole class to the point where nobody gained anything out of that time. Purely
unbelievable.
Because for whatever reason, they have been somehow or other allowed to get by with this garbage because we are not allowed to kick the little darlings out.
I know. It's not fun.
They are entitled to a free, appropriate public education.
Ugh, that's the other problem.
That's it. And they should go to college, too. Oh, my God. You know.
I know. It's not.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let you wind it up, and I'm going to take care of some stuff here because we got a handyman coming in, and I got to go do some phone banking. But thank you for taking my call, and enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you so much,
thank
Terry.
You for calling in, honey. You know, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Michael, you're still here.
Yeah, and I just wanted to let everyone know that I did drop a link into the chat room for those that are there, and it is the third video down on there on a great website called inflation.us, but the video is called College Conspiracy, and they actually call it the greatest scam in American history.
They're not far wrong, because as you said, and you were exactly correct, along with the psychological effect of telling everybody that they can't be a real human being without a college degree, the monetary, the burden of debt, the ties to government that you cannot escape, that they are creating with this stupid philosophy, it's one more link in the slave chain. One more rivet in the thrall's collar. The more you owe them, the more control they have over you. Whether it's owe them in money, owe them in obedience, owe them in loyalty, owe them in open mouth, put food in it for me, baby bird mentality. If we all remain four-year-olds waiting for mommy to bring the toast in the morning, the progressives will be thrilled because that's what they want. They do not want freedom. They cannot allow freedom because freedom disrupts the machine. It throws the cogs out of alignment. People think outside the box. They create. They invent. They improvise. They go down roads that people haven't traveled before. And that upsets the utopian view, the utopian world that progressive liberals want. And believe that they are the ones to administer because they're so much wiser and so much brighter than we are.
They're on top of it there, Terry.
Yes, sir. And, you know, it was so gratifying to me. I did not stay up for all of the debates. I went to bed shortly after they began because I had to get up at 5:30 this morning to go teach. But I did hear some as I was attempting to go to sleep, and it gratified me. And what I've seen today of the debates and what I hear from the various commentary on both sides of the political spectrum, to see the incompetence finally laid bare. The false perception of, gee, look what an intelligent president we have, finally shown up for what it is, a flat out lie. Academic knowledge and a smooth path through every Ivy League school in order to be a good token, okay, and a good representative and a good tool is not intelligence. What we have is someone who has been told his entire life that he was wonderful and he was stupid enough to believe.
That makes a lot of sense, Terry. And I'm going to let you close out your show here, too, as we have a couple, 2-3 minutes left. I just want to thank you so much for all the shows you do and for what you do, you know, in our school system is incredible. I wish I were there every day to watch and learn from you. You are very wise, very kind, very smart person who knows what goes where. And I thank you again so much, Terry, for sharing that with all of us. You have a great evening, and God bless, hon.
God bless, Michael, and thank you very much. I feel very humble that you have such a high opinion of me, and I will do everything I can to live up to it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for joining us tonight for Patriot Education. And I urge you all to join us every night of the week here on Blog Talk Radio for the Patriot Family Radio shows. We have some great folks who come on the air here, ladies and gentlemen, to share their thoughts, ideas, their opinions, and we want you to share yours as well. Give us a call. If you disagree, that's fine. Call in and tell us why. We can learn from you. You can learn from us. We all are lifetime learners. We have to be able to survive in our rapidly changing world. We can teach and learn from one another every moment of our day. And I hope that we always will. The reason we can is partly in us and partly in the freedom we enjoy in this nation, where speaking what you believe to be the truth cannot be deemed blasphemy and get your head cut off for it. Because we are guaranteed, our Constitution, the right of freedom of speech and freedom of worship. We can follow our own path. And Jefferson said, so long as it doesn't break my arm or pick my pocket, it's okay with me. Whatever way you follow, try to follow it in a way that benefits yourself and those around you. I believe in the resiliency and the innate goodness of the human spirit. I understand that we all are flawed. We are not divine. We are not deities. We are human. That is our great glory and our great shame. But because we are human, we can learn from our failures. And in a way, the ability to fail is one of the greatest blessings we've been given. For it teaches us. And it gives us strength. Join us here on Blog Talk Radio next Thursday for Patriot Education. Come and visit us at www.patriotfamilies.com. Meet some great people who have some great ideas. Join us for a laugh or a smile or an argument or a good debate. We're here and we're always ready to listen. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, we are the nation. And God bless you all. Good night, and hopefully I'll see you next week.